How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent, and empowered children? And they say it takes a village. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. Hello, it's great to have you with me. I'm Kim Clyden, former ABC radio presenter and children's book author, creating a community of people who care about children. When was the last time you sat and listened? I mean, really listened. Out in nature, to the sounds all around you, the birds, the trees, the wind. That's what today's conversation is inviting us to do. Slow down, listen, and remember something we may have forgotten. And what if all the answers we were searching for aren't found with more noise, more content, more doing, but in listening more deeply to the world around us? Monty Nixon is a PhD researcher at the University of Canberra, whose work sits in the midst of education, ecology, and Indigenous ways of knowing. Monty grew up walking through the mountain ranges in Central Australia, an experience that grounded him in nature from a very young age, shaping not only his path, but his purpose. From studying outdoor and environmental education to critically examining the relationships between climbers, custodians, and place, Monty's work has consistently asked a powerful question. How do we rebuild our relationship with the places in which we live, in a way that fosters care, understanding, and custodial responsibility? Today, through his PhD and work on the Country as Teacher project, Monty is exploring how Indigenous ways of being, knowing, and doing, particularly the practice of deep listening, can transform modern education systems. And before we commence this discussion, I'd like to acknowledge Australian Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples as the first inhabitants and traditional custodians of this land. We pay our respects to elders past and present and acknowledge the deep and enduring connection First Nations people hold with country. A relationship built on knowledge, stewardship, and respect. For tens of thousands of years, learning didn't happen separate from the land. It happened within it, where country and all living beings were the teachers, and humans learned not just to exist, but belong. Monty, I've been able to understand where your connection began, walking through country in Central Australia. How did those early experiences shape the way you're walking through the world today?
I mean, I just feel immensely privileged that I got to grow up in Alice Springs. And, you know, I have so many fond memories as a child, just waking up in riverbeds, in open canvas swags, and getting out and, you know, before everyone else is awake and putting a few sticks on the fire and seeing if I can get the fire going from some hot coals. And just going for walks with, you know, my grandmother that lived out there, and just being able to look in those 360 degrees and see those stories, as you mentioned, Kim, that are quite marked in the landscape, was just really incredible. And it's really what really sparked an interest in the outdoors for me, was those early experiences. And then also, you know, at high school, being able to go for long walks in those mountain ranges as well. And there was a time in particular where I was spending a lot of time by myself preparing for these walks and just going exploring on these trails and looking around and just feeling so calm in this otherworldly experience, which was so different to, you know, life in town. It was really that. And another memory that I had was going back. So I finished high school and, you know, in year 12, I put everything I had into making sure that I achieved the perfect result. But it was pretty burnt out at the end of that experience. But went back and worked as a gap student and got to go back out on those programs, and woke up one morning and it was just raining, and just thinking, oh, I feel really happy. I feel really calm. And I haven't felt like this in a little while. So spent the day talking the ear off the leader of the camp, going, what does it mean to work in outdoor education? Because I think that's what I want to do in my life. So, yeah, so grateful to grow up in a place like that.
What do you think it is about places like that, where you can separate yourself from the urban noise and the busyness of urban environments, that allows us to connect to country and nature?
I think it's about that pace, like you say, that all those noises that we live in our everyday lives, just being able to slow down and have the opportunity to look and listen and, you know, just be, instead of feeling like the classic example is school. You know, we have an hour to tick off this part of the curriculum before we move on to the next subject area. And there's that continuous change of subjects and thinking and a high pressure environment. Whereas the experiences that I got to have growing up were, you know, we'll put the fire on, make some coals, and we'll put some vegetables in the camp oven, and we'll just wait and we'll just have a cup of tea and we'll just be in this place, you know, looking after that fire, but just going at that slower rate, I think is, yeah, so to me anyway, feels so magical and feels even more so in a time where we're just going.
Why were your family there in the first place?
A couple of different stories, but mum became an audiologist and so moved out there to work in both communities, traveling around communities as an audiologist, but also in town. And dad was similar. He had an opportunity to go out there, and he started at a radio company, but he ended up in film. And so both of them were just taken by that landscape and the slowness of life. And I think they're also just, I think they stayed there for the sense of community. There's a very creative, artistic, and, you know, I grew up feeling very lucky to grow up in a sense of community like that, where there was individuals that really cared about each other and looked after each other. And, yeah, quite fortunate, yeah, to be part of that and have that growing up.
I've only ever been to Alice Springs as a tourist, and that was quite some years ago now, actually, in 2010. From my perspective of being there, it was deeply saddening to me to see the Indigenous population living the way they do, you know, some of the social issues that exist there. How different was your experience with the local Indigenous people?
I had some really amazing experiences with a lot of different people in Alice Springs, and I was really fortunate. My mum is part of the Alice Springs Beanie Festival, which you might have heard of, and a lot of the work that she gets to do is working alongside Indigenous people and making beanies together. And so, you know, I was really lucky to, I guess, spend time at the festival and in other moments just sort of learning from those old beanie makers, and the generosity of their sharing of knowledge, you know, always astounded me. And yeah, I just remember so many fond memories of sitting down and, you know, talking and having cups of tea and, you know, having that opportunity to learn.
How have you been able to draw on that experience through your PhD studies, for instance?
Well, so yeah, I left Alice Springs and kind of moved through outdoor education and came to Canberra, and was really fortunate to meet two people that I've, you know, really look up to here, Professor Benny Wilson and Dr. David Spillman, who sort of also took me under their wing and have been really big mentors for me, first as a research assistant. So I worked with them on a couple of research projects, Country as Teacher, which is really the foundation of my PhD. And those experiences, learning from those men, as well as other, you know, senior men that have been really influential in sharing knowledge with us. Professor Paul Gordon, who's a senior custodian for Garigili Country, some of that knowledge that they've shared is, and the mentorship that they've provided, coupled with those early experiences of being, of growing up in Alice Springs, I think has really, it guides everything that I end up doing in my PhD. And the lessons that they've taught me and shown me how to be are the foundation of my work.
I don't believe we learn enough about Indigenous culture in this country, considering how valuable it is with the thousands of years they've lived on country. Why do you think it's so important to include Indigenous culture in this type of study that you've been doing and share that with others through education?
So I became really interested in this idea of connection to nature and how can we help connect people to nature. And like you said, as I started learning more and more about the way that, you know, Indigenous people have been living in this country for, you know, thousands and thousands of years, it became really clear to me that, you know, we probably should be doing a lot more learning from that ongoing mutual flourishing that we knew was happening. And I suppose for me, it was a process of going, okay, how can I learn in a respectful way? Because, you know, I wanted to make sure that everything that I do honors those gifts rather than continues to take and extract. And so that process has been a really slow one, and just engaging with that learning process. But at the heart of what I've learned, and it's more than, I think, for me, just the learning about Indigenous culture, but it's engaging in ways of knowing, being, and doing. So, you know, I've been really fortunate to be shown, you know, that when we go out on country, it's not about humans doing all the talking and doing all the teaching, but sort of getting out of the way and giving students the opportunity just to spend time looking and listening to, we use the term earthkin, you know, all our family that is, you know, maybe not human or is not human, but holds so many valuable lessons for us to learn. And I think that, you know, as we move forward in a time where, you know, our landscape is changing so drastically, this is even more important now than ever to listen to what country is telling us, and especially listening to how we might go around that process of looking and listening and learning from those people that have been doing that teaching and learning for thousands and thousands of years.
I love the article that you co-authored with Andrew Skiok, who is the author of Deep Listening to Nature. I actually watched his presentation on that work because he actually records audio in nature. And the article was titled What Deep Listening Can Tell Us About the Natural World and Our Place in It. So for people who haven't read that article, you know, what are the benefits of being in nature and actually listening to the interactions? Because Andrew's work, you know, there's a lot about birds and the way that they communicate with each other about location and threats in the environment. So they're very collaborative.
Very collaborative. And that was probably the foundation for that piece. So I met Andrew while I was first studying at the University of La Trobe, and he gave a very similar talk to this one that you might have seen about him talking about the different sounds in the landscape. And I was just blown away by, you know, how much conversation is happening around us all the time if we just take that time to listen. And so, you know, that article was really building on both Andrew's work and the work that he's been doing across many years of that practice of deep listening and the work that we've been doing in country as teachers. So in a way, that article was trying to honour that mixed species foraging that he was talking about, where maybe people that have slightly different stories, like those two different birds, have different, you know, ways of being, but they're working together. And so for us, that was an opportunity to collaborate. And what we explored was both some of the lessons that Andrew's learned about the importance of cooperation, but also being really respectful to each other, and the importance of listening really deeply. And what we mean by that is not just listening to one single bird and the story that that bird might be telling us, but trying to learn how to hear the bigger story that's happening in the world around us and the way that birds, animals, country interacts, and learning from how that works, and then thinking about, well, as humans, surely we can learn so much from that and so much from the way that the world seems to come together in this form of cooperation. And so it tied those perspectives from Andrew's learning together with some of the work that we've been doing with teachers here in the ACT at the University of Canberra, where we've worked with, you know, over 120 educators to help them change their teaching practice to move from, like I was saying before, that very direct teaching out the front to going out and allowing students to have their own experiences and build that practice of listening deeply to the world. One of my mentors, Uncle Spilly, always shares that, you know, humans share the most surface level of knowledge, but that depth of knowledge comes from those direct experiences, looking and listening. So, you know, helping teachers take that step back, which can be scary, right? Because as educators, we really want to make sure that we're doing everything right by our students. And there's a fear about relinquishing control of learning experiences. But what we've been able to show through our research is that when we do that, we have really positive benefits for our students. They get really intrigued. They get really curious. Like, we know that young people are very curious beings. They really, once we give them that opportunity to explore, they will tune into some of those big stories. And that kind of fuels that inquiry way of learning. And we've seen some amazing learning journeys unfold because of that.
And this is a leaf taken directly from Indigenous culture book, because elders who are highly revered, that's their role in those, you know, societal layers where they take the younger generations out on country. One thing I heard in there, though, is that for education to actually achieve this, there are a lot of other layers they need to go through. You know, what challenges are you facing going into the great outdoors with children in an environment where there's snakes, spiders, and things that could potentially kill you?
Look, there's, as you say, many different, I guess, challenges that you do run into in a system that is so heavily regulated. And I suppose, you know, the way that we've been learning to navigate this is to, one, go slowly. This isn't a change that happens overnight. And what we found is really important is engaging as a whole school. So we've been working with a whole school approach where we've been working both with the teachers in the classroom, but also the executive that are providing that support. And we found that's a really important element of this collaboration, where once school leaders are really supportive and, you know, they really want to see this learning happening, it kind of starts to open some of those doors and some of those challenges start to dissolve. It's not to say that those aren't there, but it is certainly just about coming together as a cohesive cohort, and we're really hoping that maybe part of our research can start to open that door for some more people to look at this and go, oh, it is safe, it is okay to do this, and more than that, it's really important for our children.
I live on acreage and I hear a chorus of birdsong at daybreak every morning and at dusk every evening, from kookaburras to leatherheads. When you're talking about the birds and the interactivity in nature, and I see the value in that, because when we notice it and when we sit in it, it is so peaceful. But why do you think for children, particularly students and schools, it's so important right now at this juncture of human history to connect them back to nature for our future?
So part of the wisdom that's been shared with me is that if we want to take care of the world around us, first we have to have a relationship with it and we have to know it deeply. And without doing either of those two things, we can't truly care. We can think, you know, we can conjure up and we can sit and abstractly sit in a room and talk about how we might care, but unless we have that deep knowledge of the places that we live, of the world around us, we won't be able to, you know, bring the level of care that I think that we need. And so I think particularly for our children, it's really important, because it helps them build that relationship by taking them out, giving them that opportunity. They, you know, can develop that sense of knowing, understanding and caring for the places that they live, for the world that they live in. But I think the other thing that it provides is a sense of connection for them. And when I think we, as humans, we crave that connection, right? And so when we, and I think back to my experiences back growing up in Alice Springs, like to me that place still grounds me and still is part of who I am. And, you know, I've recently become a father, and I just hope that for my little girl, you know, that she can grow up with that same sense of feeling of connection here in Canberra, that connection to country, and understanding that as a human, we are deeply connected with the world. For most of our existence, we've had these really deep relationships with the real world around us. And so, you know, I'd love for school to help honour those relationships and help build them.
What are you seeing with students who do connect, collaborate, and display curiosity in their natural environment in relation to what they understand about the changes that are happening in the world, particularly through climate change?
So I think that one of the big things is about, you know, starting at that really local level for a lot of our students and starting to see and build that sense of care for their local environments, that local country where they live. And what we're seeing is this really increasing curiosity and this desire to want to know more. So going on that journey of how can we look after these places that we do live? How can, you know, learning about practices of fire, or how can we take care of mini beasts, or, you know, little insects? So it's really about that micro level of learning before, I guess, building that level up to going, okay, What are some of those bigger impacts? And I think that is the long-term shift that we really hope we're working towards or playing a role in is, you know, once we have that relationship with the country that we live, then we can start thinking about, okay, how do we start working on these really big problems? And I think for me, you know, that's the strong emphasis within schooling and growing to that big level of looking at things like climate change, because I think the small changes that we can do on that local level that will make a big difference in the long term.
How early should we start? I mean, you've just had a child who's a little too young to understand those bigger concepts, but how can we actually begin this in that 0 to 5 before they even go into the education system?
I think it's just about continuing to stoke the curiosity. And so, you know, with my little one, just spending time outside and figuring out, you know, setting those boundaries about what's safe and what's not, but also, you know, always trying to keep her interested in the world around her, exploring the feeling of bark or sticks. And I think that that's probably the best thing that we can do as they grow up is help them hold on to that sense of curiosity. I'm blown away every day. I wish that I had the curiosity that I see in my little girl, and I would love to try and emulate that a little bit more. And so my focus is just keeping that alive and keeping it really strong.
You've been recognised late last year in the Australian Association for Environmental Education with an award. Tell me a little bit more about that experience for you and why it matters for those projects to be highlighted in that way.
So I think it's, so amazing to be recognised as amongst the environmental education community. So it was a recognition of, I suppose, my work as part of a much broader team, this country's teacher team, that we're all working together. And it feels like an amazing opportunity to share some of the work that we're doing with our fellow colleagues. And it's also just that opportunity to sit down and share and collaborate. And that's the thing that I really love about being a part of associations like the Environmental Educators Association, is that opportunity to share the things that we're learning and work together in that collaborative manner. I think that's such an important way moving forward, that going back to that diversity of perspectives, I think there's real strength in coming together and sharing our stories and learning from each other. So it felt really, you know, an amazing opportunity for us to share a bit of our story and some of the work that we're doing in the hope that maybe it will be helpful for someone else in a different space.
What would you like to see as a result of all of this in 10 years' time, for instance, when your daughter is in primary school and experiencing the world in a whole different way?
I'd love for it to just keep growing slowly and keep growing. So we refer back to the idea of a cultural burn, so nice, cool and slow growing out. In 10 years, I'd just love to, you know, be able to know that when she goes to school, that day she's going to have an opportunity to go outside and learn about country, learn through that looking and listening process, and that it's not seen as an add-on to the curriculum, but it's seen as a way of teaching the curriculum.
I get the feeling, Monty Nixon, that your daughter will be teaching others about what she knows thanks to you. Thank you so much for joining me today on What We Teach Our Children. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I hope we get to do this again.
Me too. Thanks very much.
I'm not sure about you, but I found that conversation profoundly humbling. Monty Nixon, PhD student from the University of Canberra. And the reason I found it so humbling is not because Monty positions himself as someone with all the answers, but instead invites us back into a relationship, one that has always been there. If we do that, we begin to care. And through care, we begin to change. Imagine how powerful that will be for our children who face uncertainty and unfathomable change in the world we see today. Monty's work will mean that education isn't just about information. It's about connection, responsibility, and belonging. And if we can teach that to our children, we may just shape a future that honours both people and planet. If you'd like more information about the things Monty and I discussed, or links to some of the content we were talking about, it's all in the show notes. And I'll be back again next week with another conversation that may just change the way you see the world. Until we're together again, let's be the change we want to see in the world.